Hello and welcome back to Planet Waves FM special coverage of the United Astrology Conference from New Orleans. My name is Eric Francis. Welcome back to our program. And I am here with our second guest of the day. That's a gentleman named James Rogers.
Yes.
From Asheville, North Carolina. And James has a really interesting story that I've only heard about three sentences of, which is that he came to astrology from being a medical doctor, in particular a psychiatrist, and made the transition about 4 or 5 years ago into doing astrology. Obviously, there's a relationship between astrology and psychiatry. We're kind of amateur brain surgeons as amateur psychiatrists.
Very well put.
Astrologers. Yeah. What is it that led you to make the transition into doing astrology?
Well, after I did my psychiatric residency in Boston, I worked for about 12 years as a board-certified psychiatrist until my Uranian opposition. And then I decided, being a good Jungian, that the second part of life should be about finding the spiritual part of life.
Got it.
So I left medicine, and I began studying Western esotericism, and I became very interested in the psychology of transformation. Began studying alchemy. I have a diploma in alchemy and hermetic sciences.
From where?
From the International Alchemy Guild. And from the studying the psycho-spiritual pathway of alchemy led me to astrology. And I became very interested in the archetypal paths that are evident within astrological symbolism about change and transformation. And I began writing about that, and I began writing papers on alchemy and mysticism, and began publishing papers on astrology and psycho-spiritual transformation. And that's how I got into astrology, is through my interest in the psychology of transformation, and that the symbolism is there in astrology, and I've been using that.
Did you retire from medicine before you started working as an astrologer and take some time off between them?
Yes, I did.
So you had the ability to do that. You had worked a successful career and had some flexibility and did something that most people don't do, which is pause at midlife and make a conscious decision.
Exactly. It was very helpful, yeah.
Right.
It was very helpful.
And what are you presenting on at this conference?
My topic is from a paper that was published in the Astrological Journal, which is the Astrological Association of Great Britain's journal that was published a few years ago. And the title is called Asteroid Goddesses and the Mystic Way, Models of Spiritual Transformation. And what I do is I take the reawakened feminine principles inherent in the asteroid symbolism and compare them to the pathway of spiritual change described as the mystic way, purgation, illumination, and union. And I try to show how the reawakened feminine principle, inherent in the asteroid symbolism, catalyzes the movement to more illumined states of consciousness. There's a great deal of transformative potential in asteroid symbolism.
How do you see that manifesting?
Well, in terms of mysticism, in all spiritual paths, there's first of all an awakening, followed by a purification, leading to illumination and union. That's the path.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the four main asteroids, Ceres, Vesta, Pallas, Athena, and Juno, their archetypal expressions on a psycho-spiritual level fits nicely in with that pathway. Ceres with awakening, Vesta with purification, Pallas with illumination, and Juno with union. And if you look at their mythological stories and their association with the four elements, they fit in very nicely in with those stages. And that's what my talk here at UX is about.
So how would an astrologer apply that to someone's life, looking at a client's chart, casting in those four bodies?
Sure. One is, if your client is in a stage of psycho-spiritual transformation, and hopefully at some point we'll all get to that stage.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's a point of realizing that what our true nature is, what is our true essence, which is really buried within us. Spiritual disciplines realize that our true nature, our pure nature, gets buried or gets lost as we live in the modern world. Our false selves and false attachments which is associated with our ego, really hide what our true self is. So we have to awaken to a path of realizing that we have a transcendent nature and that a true nature resides within us. I like to think of a spiritual journeyer as someone who's more of an archaeologist than an explorer. It's that understanding that we have within us our true self, but we have to find it, we have to awaken to it. Mm-hmm. So if your client is at that stage, then looking at the asteroids both natally and by transits or progressions can help the timing and the pathway of moving along this path.
Do you use transits to work on the timing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Right. So what if they come to you and they're having a big Vesta transit, but the first stage of the journey, as you outlined it, involves a series awakening?
Yes.
So what if they're having like Pluto conjunct Vesta?
Well, no, good point. These paths, these stages are very organic. They're not rigid.
Got it.
Very, very few mystics, which is what I deal with and talk about, ever follow these stages in a rigid way. It's a fluid, organic process.
Mm-hmm.
There's multiple awakenings, multiple purifications. Mm-hmm. So I would, what I really try to do is with the client is to see really where they're at.
Right.
And to see if they're really ready in this stage. It's a very difficult process. Mm-hmm. But certainly looking at the natal chart, for instance, each of these four main asteroids are associated with the four elements. Ceres with Earth, mm-hmm. Vesta with fire, Pallas with air, Juno with water. So if these are in these elements, either by sign or house, an air sign or a house, for instance, for Pallas, it's particularly strong natally. But also looking at it through transits, these are the times. So transits are times of opportunity. So when a Ceres is going through an earth sign or an earth house, this could be a strong time for the person to work on this awakening, and likewise with the other asteroids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Do you do any work with Chiron?
I do with Chiron. I give talks on depression in astrology, so this is a little different. But I work a lot with Hygieia, the asteroid of the virgin goddess of health, and with Chiron. And I think when I look at depression in a client, Hygieia and Chiron, I believe, are the chart's antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
They're very strong. They're afflicted most of the time during a start of a depression and into a depression. And it's very interesting that I find that when a depression is easing, that Hygieia and Chiron are more benefically aspected. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding this a lot. So I feel that they're really the chart's antidepressants. I also think that Chiron is somewhat misnamed. I think that Hygieia is about maintaining wellness. I think Chiron has a lot of the Asclepian qualities to it, which is about healing.
Well, Chiron was Asclepius's teacher.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So there's that connection there.
Well, there's a tradition, right? It goes back to Apollo, who taught medicine to Chiron.
Exactly. Exactly.
And a lot of it was battlefield medicine, by the way.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And I guess you could look at modern life as being something of a battlefield.
It certainly is.
There's a lot of conflict involved and competition and people getting hurt quite a bit.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So let's go back to Ceres for a second. Let's talk about Ceres and awakenings. How did you translate that delineation from what you knew about Ceres, or did you just notice it?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Ceres is the goddess of agriculture. She's the fertility goddess that sustains and brings forth new life. Now, if you look at this from a psycho-spiritual point of view, you could say that she's bringing forth and nurturing spiritual life. And in that sense, I see Ceres as awakening. She's bringing forth and sustaining new life. You get that from her mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she's also associated with the Eleusinian Mysteries,
mm-hmm.
which is about the great mystery religion of the ancient world that really looks at the process of life, death, and renewal. So in many respects, Ceres is the whole process of change. So I see her as both awakening, being the fertility goddess, and the goddess that sustains and brings forth new life, but also she's the foundation of the whole process of transformation.
The mysterious process of change.
Right.
What does Eleusinian pertain to?
The Eleusinian mysteries come from the myth of Demeter and Persephone. Mm-hmm. One of the great myths of the ancient world, of Persephone being abducted by Pluto, Demeter, Ceres, searching for her daughter. And it brings up the principle, the archetypal theme of loss and return, of death and renewal. Mm-hmm. That came out of this myth. It was celebrated in the ancient world annually in these initiation rites, which were called the Eleusinian Mysteries. They were celebrated for over 2,000 years, 1600 B.C. to 400 A.D. Mm-hmm. These annual...
rite of passages.
Exactly, exactly. Which taught initiates about this process of life, death, and renewal. And that's what the Ceres, her importance is in, mm-hmm. in the ancient world.
So there's a tie-in to Pluto here, particularly given that Pluto, Eris, and Ceres were designated the first three dwarf planets back in 2006.
Yes.
Did that change or enhance your interpretation in any way?
Yeah, very much so, because we're talking about the reawakened feminine principle, and the asteroids sometimes don't get the due that they deserve. And Ceres being promoted to a dwarf planet, I think, just raises this feminine energy, the importance of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that just emphasizes the need to really look at these asteroids more seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I would think that the acknowledgement that Pluto is a minor planet, give it a minor planet number, right? 136 or something, 436 or some such number. I should know it, but I don't. That would call attention to other planets similar to Pluto, because we were duped into thinking that Pluto was a planet for most of the 20th century, or all, you know, since it was discovered till 06. And now there's a lot of planets out there in the Kuiper Belt.
Yes.
Do you tune into any of those bodies?
Only in the respect that they, being beyond Saturn's reach, being trans-Saturnian, that they are transpersonal, collective, unconscious. And like Uranus out, they require personalizing. They require being made conscious in order to be used psychologically. Again, I'm a psychological astrologer, mm-hmm. so I look at them that way. But... they, like any of the other trans-Saturnians, the Kuiper Belt, obviously, any of the trans-Saturnians, from a psychological and spiritual point of view, need to be made conscious in order to be integrated and used personally. So they all that entire process interests me as an astrologer.
So what would be an example of making conscious? Something like... pick your favorite.
Well,
TNO.
Well. I like
Pluto even.
Yes. Okay. I just wrote a paper for the NCGR Research Journal, looking at octave transformers. That the asteroids are octave transformers between the lower octave personal planets and the higher octave outer planets Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. Right. The lower octaves are personal. They're conscious. The higher octave planets are unconscious, divine. And I believe that the asteroids work as octave transformers to personalize the outer planetary energies. And they form octave triads, right? Mercury is about the individual mind. Uranus is about the divine mind. I believe Pallas Athena is the generative energy that bridges those two realms, the lower and the higher. Mm-hmm. I believe that Venus is about individual union and love. Neptune is about divine union and love. I think Juno forms the octave triad that brings those together. And I've written about this in the latest research journal of the NCGR, if you want to read more about
it. It's an interesting way to think of them psychologically and to kind of arrange a model of the psyche and where you might go for help if you were having a struggle bridging the personal love of Venus with the transpersonal love of Neptune. Hmm. You're saying you'd go to Juno for that help?
Look
for the Juno placement in the chart for that and see what that had to say.
Exactly.
So if I have Juno conjunct Pallas and Sag, what does that tell you?
Well, I'd like to know where your Mercury and your Uranus were, because I'm saying that Juno...
They're opposing each other from Virgo to Pisces.
Okay.
No, wait, yeah, Uranus is in Virgo, yep, and, yeah. And it's loose opposition, but it's there.
Right. Well, again, if we're talking about looking at the lower octave Mercury, the higher octave Uranus, and using Pallas as the way of bringing those together, Pallas by sign and house can show you where and how you can get to moving from the individual mind to the universal mind. Mm-hmm. So Pallas in an air sign would suggest thinking is a way to do it, or focusing on perception is the way to do it. Pallas in a water house might suggest that a water house or sign might suggest that using feeling or intuition may be a better way of bridging that personal with the transpersonal.
Mm-hmm. So I have it in a fire. I have a conjunct Pallas in a fire sign in the sixth house. It sounds like a lot of work.
Yes, it would be a lot of work. Exactly.
Devotion and
exactly
a lot of time in counseling rooms on either end of the.
Exactly.
Either end of the process. Exactly. So I always thought I was living out my chart perfectly well. From your practice of psychiatry, what wisdom do you bring into astrology? Human skills, obviously.
Right. Well, I believe that I can help a client find out what their psychological needs are and then use their chart to help delineate those archetypal themes that are strong, psychological archetypal themes that are prominent in the charts, and work with them and seeing where they're at.
So that's a long way from Prozac.
Well, I prescribed a lot of Prozac in my day, but
well, psychiatry has largely become medical prescribing. I mean, it's become a prescribing thing much more than a counseling thing. When I was growing up, you would sit and talk with your psychiatrist. That was why they were called a head shrinker. You'd sit there and they'd shrink your head down a little bit. Now they seem to fill it up with things.
Absolutely.
Come out of the laboratories of... do you have any concern that the psychiatric drugs are harmful?
Well, they certainly have side effects. I mean, there's no medication you take that does not have side effects.
Right.
And it takes a really skilled psychopharmacologist, which what I was. I really prescribed medications. I was a psychopharmacologist.
Yes.
And you just simply have to monitor. It would be nice if we had a medicine that did what it's supposed to do without side effects.
I Need a New Drug, that song by Huey Lewis.
Yeah, right, exactly. Wouldn't that be nice?
So it seems like there's a lot of trial and error with the psychiatric drugs, but you don't know which side, which analog of the drug to prescribe necessarily, or the one that covers both. Someone was explaining the chemistry of this recently, that you have to really take a good guess first and then monitor the patient and maybe after a couple of months switch the medication to the other analog, other mirror-facing molecule.
Exactly. There's a lot of art to it. We like to think of it as science. And there's a good part of that, but being a psychiatrist prescribing medications is a lot of art and a lot of experience, and so you really do have to sometimes take a shot in the dark and to monitor the patient, see where it works. Yeah?
Yes, hopefully there's a lot of monitoring the patient finding out how they're feeling,
right,
and how they're responding. These drugs all make me really nervous just looking at the bottle or seeing the ads on TV or hearing the stories.
They make me nervous too.
You know, turning the episodic depression into a chronic depression, for example, is a now a known side effect.
Yes.
And the use of the drugs far above and beyond any counseling, there's often no counseling at the time. So you've gone completely the other way into a totally counseling-related. You maintain your medical license, I'm gathering.
Not in North Carolina. I was licensed in Massachusetts.
Here, right. Not anymore?
No, I cannot prescribe now. No.
In Massachusetts. You've been out of the game too long, or you didn't renew your license?
Exactly. I've been out of the game too long. Yeah.
So that expires if you stop practicing, your license expires after a while?
Yes. Well, you have to maintain it every year, yeah. And since I left 7 years ago, moved to North Carolina, I haven't... kept it up.
Got it.
Much to my wife's chagrin.
Right. Well, you probably make more as a doctor than as an astrologer, but you can do pretty well as an astrologer if you're organized and you have a good clientele and you
working on it. Yes.
All right. And once again, the topic of your talk this week is going to be
the title is Goddess Astrology and the Mystic Way.
Got it. Okay. Good.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Yeah, we've been speaking with James Rogers, formerly a medical doctor from Massachusetts, now a basically psychological astrologer practicing in North Carolina and a presenter at the United Astrology Conference. Continuing coverage on Planet Waves FM. We'll continue a little bit later into the day. Thank you for being our second guest on the program here from the conference, James.
Great to be here.
Okay. Till next time. Bye for now.